Chapter 15. Desecration. Communion. Visions of Death. Skral surged through the dark and the heat, rising now, exploiting conduits and pipes, and using any means he could to secrete his ascent up the decks of the furious abyss. Finally he arrived, incredulously, at the place where weeks before he had fled, leaving Antigues to his death. He had returned to the temple. Skral found that Antigues remained too. Dismembered in his armour, the dark blue of the Ceramite almost hidden by the red sheen of blood, the world-eater could only tell it was Antigues by his chapter symbols. Little more than a collection of body parts existed now. What lay before him on a pall, attended by silent acolytes, could barely be considered a corpse. Antigues's head was missing. Skral had heard of the inhabitants of feral worlds who dismembered their foes or sacrificed humans to their heathen gods. The world-eaters had their own warrior traditions, most of them bloody, but nothing to compare to the religious mutilation he had seen among the savages. To see Astartes, especially the self-righteously sophisticated word-bearers, doing thus shocked Skral as much as the moment that the furious abyss had turned on the Imperial fleet. The galaxy was changing very quickly. The words of Zadkiel, spoken so many days ago in the gallery, echoed back at him. The world-eater shrank deeper into the shadows as he saw Astartes entering the chamber. One, the warrior he had fought earlier in the temple during his escape, he recognized. It was not with a little satisfaction that he saw the metal artifice attached to the word-bearer's face where Skral had broken his jaw and shattered his cheekbone. A darkly armoured chaplain accompanied the warrior Rescule. One of the demagogues of the Legion, the chaplain wore a skull-faced battle helm with conjoined rebreather apparatus worked into the gorget, and carried a Crozius, the icon of his office. Silently, Rescule gave the acolytes orders. As if understanding on some instinctive level, they bowed curtly and proceeded to lift what was left of Antigues on a steel pall. Together, they raised him up onto their shoulders, and, led by the chaplain, left the room. Rescule lingered in their wake, probing the shadows, and for a brief moment Skral thought he was discovered. But the word-bearer turned eventually and followed the macabre procession. Loosening the grip of his chain-axe, the world-eater went after them. Trailing the enemy at a discreet distance, Skral was led down a pathway lined with statues that flowed towards what he assumed was the prow of the ship. He had previously steered clear of the vessel's forward sections, preferring to hide himself in the industrial tangle of the sternward engine decks. But a greater understanding of his enemy was worth the risk. Continuing his pursuit, the world-eater found himself in darkness, lit only by candles mounted in alcoves. Watching intently, Skral witnessed the pallbearers saying a prayer at a set of blast doors. The exact words were indiscernible, but their reverence was obvious, before continuing into a dim chamber beyond. Using the shadows like a concealing cloak, Skral moved into the room. As he got further inside, he realized that it was an anatomy theatre. A surgeon's slab dominated the centre of the room, surrounded by circular tiers of seating, though they were not occupied. Whatever ritual or experiment was to be performed here was a clandestine one. The chaplain, the vestments he wore across his armour fringed with black trim, beckoned the acolytes forward. The debased creatures, hunchbacked and robed, slunk to the table as one. Sibilant emanations pierced the silence softly as they took the disparate sections of Antigues's corpse and laid them out on the slab. Obscene and profane, the gorge in Skral's throat rose and his anger swelled at the sight of the act. Taken apart like that, it was as if Antigues was no more than a machine to be stripped down or meat cleaved at the butcher's block. Coldness smothered the anger and bile within Skral, as if his blood had been drained away and replaced with ice. It was as if a film of dirt overlaid him and choked him all at once. Skral had done terrible things. At the sack of Sholomgrad and the burning of the Athelian fleet, innocents had died. Even at Bacca Triumvirón he had killed in cold blood for the sake of slaking his thirst for carnage, but this was different. It was calculated and precise, the systematic and ritual dismemberment of another Astartes so invasive, so fundamentally destructive, that his essence was forever lost. There would be no honours for him, no clean death on the field of battle as it should be for all warriors. There was dignity in that. No, This was an aberration, soulless and terrible. To think of a fellow Astartes being so shamed, and by one of his battle brothers, it took all of Skrall's resolve not to wade in and kill them all for such defilement. Stepping forward, the chaplain approached the table, the acolytes retreating obsequiously as he picked up one of Antigas's arms to inspect it.
"There is no head,"
he asked, setting the limb back down as he turned to his fellow word-bearer. "Wasoric required it," replied Reskill.
"I see. And now our omniscient lord would have us yoke this chaplain for further favours of the warp."
There was an almost contemptuous tone to the chaplain's words.
"You speak out of turn, Ichthalon," Reskill snapped. "You would do well to remember who is master aboard this ship."
"Be still, sycophant."
The chaplain, Ichthalon, fashioned his retort into a snarl.
"Your allegiance is well known to all, as is your ambition."
Reskill moved to respond, but was cut off.
"Hold your tongue. Think on the fate of those left at Bacca Triumvirum. Think of Altis before you speak of whom is master. In this place,"
he said, spreading his arms to encompass the macabre surgery,
"you supplicate yourself to me. Zadkiel's wizened astropath has had his turn and sealed the pact with Wasoric. Now I will divine what I can from what remains. Speak no further. I have need to concentrate. And you try my patience, Reskill."
The other word-bearer, cowed by the tirade, retreated back into the shadows to let the chaplain work. Skrall kept watching with abhorred satisfaction, but was intrigued by the obvious dissension within the word-bearer's ranks.
"Warrior's hands," said Ichthalon, gauntleted fingers tracing Antigas's palm as he resumed his morbid examination. "Strong and instinctive. But I will need more."
The chaplain gestured at the former ultramarine's torso.
"Open it."
One of the acolytes took a lascutter from beneath the slab and sheared through the front of Antigas's breastplate. The gilded decoration split off from the ceramite and clattered to the floor. The word-bearers ignored it. Once the acolyte with a cutter retreated, Ichthalon inserted his fingers into the cut. With a grunt of effort, he forced the ultramarine's chest open. The complex mass of an Astartes' organs was exposed. Skrall could make out the two hearts and third lung, together with the reverse of the bony breastplate that fused from every Astartes' ribs. The chaplain dug a hand into the gory dark and extracted an organ. It looked like the ulitic kidney, or perhaps the omophagia. Ichthalon regarded it coolly, putting the organ down and yanking out a handful of entrails. He cast them across the slab and stood for a long time peering into the loops of tissue and sprays of blood.
"Macrag suspects nothing,"
he hissed, discerning meaning from the act. Running a finger through the bloody miasma, he added,
"Here, that's our route. It lies open to us."
"What of Calf?"
Reskill asked from the darkness.
"That is unclear," Ichthalon replied. "Corpheron has no obstacles, save any he makes for himself."
The chaplain peered into Antigas's open chest again.
"There is veining on the third lung. Gilliman is represented there as just a man, not a primarch, just a man, ignorant of his fate."
Ichthalon's voice dripped with malice. The chaplain looked further, his gaze lingering for a moment on one of Antigas's hearts before his head snapped up quickly.
"We are not alone," he snarled.
Reskill's bolter swung up in readiness, and he barked into the transponder in his gorget.
"In the anatomy theatre! Now!"
A troop of four word-bearers barged into the room, weapons drawn.
"Spread out!" Reskill bellowed. "Find him!"
Skrall backed out of the chamber. He forged back down the way he had come and split off from the candlelit path, kicking open a maintenance hatch and dropping into a tangle of wiring and circuitry. He stormed ahead, relying on the ship to hide him for a little longer. He wanted to feel rage and be comforted by it, but he couldn't reach it. He felt numb. Visions raced into Cestus's mind as he felt all of tangible reality fall away around him. At once, he was suspended in the depths of real space, for Masca rolled beneath, its laborious orbit somehow visible. Silvered torpedoes struck suddenly against its surface at strategic points across the moon. Miniature detonations were discernible as a slow shockwave resonated over it in ripples of destructive force.
Sesta saw tiny fractures in the outer crust, magnifying with each passing second into massive fissures that yawned like jagged mouths. Formaska glowed and pulsed as if it were a throbbing heart giving out its last inexorable beat. The moon exploded. Debris cascaded outwards in shuddering waves, minuscule asteroids burning up in the atmosphere of nearby McCrag. A fleet suspended in the planet's upper atmosphere was destroyed. Impossibly, Cestus heard the screams of his homeworld's inhabitants below as the detritus of Formaska's death rained upon them in superheated waves of rock. Something moved in the debris field, shielded from the thundering defense lasers of McCrag's surface. Getting ever closer, the dark shape breached the planet's atmosphere. The vision shifted to the industrial hive of the cities. A cloud of gas boiled along the streets, engulfing the screaming populace. The image changed again, depicting other ships, great vessels of the Crusade, held in orbit at Kalth, hit by an errant meteor storm. Cestus watched in horror as they broke up against the onslaught, the stylized U of his legion immolated in flame. The meteor shower struck Kalth, forcing its way through the planet's atmosphere to where his battle brothers mustered below. Cestus roared in anguish, furious at his impotence, screaming a desperate warning that his brothers and his Primarch would never hear. The scene changed once more as the void of real space became metal. As if propelled at subsonic speed, Cestus flew through the tunnels and chambers of a ship, through conducts, across heaving generators, beyond the fire of immense plasma-driven engines, he came at last to an ordnance deck. There, sitting innocuously amongst the other munitions, was a lethal payload. Though he could not explain how, he knew it at once to be a viral torpedo and the effective death warrant of McCrag. World killer. The words resolved themselves in the Ultramarine's mind, taunting him, goading him. Cestus railed against the sense of doom, the fathomless despair they evoked. He bellowed loud and hard, the only name he could think of to repel it.
Killiman!
Cestus was back in the isolation chamber. He saw Motep sitting across from him. The Thousand Sun's face was haggard and covered in a sheen of sweat. Cestus staggered backwards as recall returned, wrenching his bolt pistol from its holster with difficulty and pointing it waveringly at Motep.
"What did you do to me?"
he hissed, shaking his head in an effort to banish the lingering images and sensations.
"I showed you the truth,"
Motep gasped, breathing raggedly as he propped himself up against the wall of a cell.
"By sharing my memories, the memories of Ultis, with you. It is no different to the omophagia, though the absorption of memory is conducted psychically and not biologically,"
he pleaded. Cestus kept his aim on the Thousand Sun.
"Was it real?" he asked. "What I witnessed, was it real?"
he demanded, stowing the bolt pistol in favour of grabbing Motep by the throat.
"Yes!"
the Thousand Sun spat through choking breaths. Cestus held him there for a moment longer, thinking that he might crush the life out of the fellow Astartes. Exhaling deeply, Cestus let Motep go. The Thousand Sun doubled over, coughing as he gasped for breath and rubbed his throat.
"They do not plan to attack Kalth or destroy McCrag. They want to conquer them both and bring the Legion to heel, or vanquish it if it does not yield,"
said Cestus, his thoughts and fears coming out in a flood. Motep looked up at the frantic Ultramarine and nodded.
"And the destruction of Formaska is where it will begin."
"The ship," Cestus ventured, beginning to calm down. "That was the Furious Abyss, wasn't it? And the viral payload is the method of extermination for the people of McCrag."
"You have seen what I saw, and what Ultis knew," Motep confirmed, regaining his composure and sitting up.
Cestus's gaze was distant as he struggled to process everything he'd learned, together with resisting the urge to vomit against the invasive psychic experience. He looked back at Motep, a suspicious cast to his eyes and face.
"Why are you here, Motep? I mean, why are you really here?"
The Thousand Sun gazed back for a moment, and then withdrew his hood, and sighed deeply.
"I have seen the lines of fate, Ultramarine. I knew long before we made contact with the Furious Abyss, back when we were on Vangelis, that my destiny lay with this ship, that this mission, your mission, was important.
My legion is cursed with psychic mutation, but my Lord Magnus taught us to harness it, to commune with the warp, and fashion that communion into true power. Moteb ignored the growing revulsion in Cestus's face as he spoke of the Empyrean, and went on,
Nykeia was no council, Ultramarine. It was a trial, not only of my Lord Magnus, but of the entire Thousand Suns Legion. The Emperor's edict wounded him, like a father's disapproval and chastisement would wound any child. What I told you at Vangeris, that I sought to improve the reputation of my legion in the eyes of the sons of Gilliman, if no other, was in part true. I desire only to open your eyes to the potential of the psychic and how it is a boon, a ready weapon to use against our enemies.
Cestus's expression was stern in the face of Motep's impassioned arguments.
You saved us all in the Lance deck, said the Ultramarine. You probably did the same when we fought what became of the Fireblade.
But your ambition overreaches you, Motep. I have stayed Bryngar's hand, but from this point on, you will remain here in isolation. If we are successful and can reach Macragge or some other Imperial stronghold, you will face trial, and there your fate will be decided.
Cestus got to his feet and turned. As he was about to leave the room, he paused.
If you ever invade my mind like that again, I will execute you myself, he added, and left, the cell door sliding shut behind him. How narrow your mind is,
Motep hissed, focusing at once on the reflective sheen of the cell wall.
How ignorant you are of what is to come.